Welcome to the Flyover Ministry Podcast, a practical youth ministry podcast for small church leaders by small church leaders. We are grateful that you have joined us for our journey through ministry-related topics that we hope help equip and encourage you as you serve Jesus wherever you are.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Dan.
And I'm Jordan.
And this is Flyover Ministry. In a rare occurrence here, we are in the same room together recording this live. It is 11:30 at night as we are in Orlando, Florida for the D6 conference. We are excited to be here. We're also feeling a little snacky, so if you hear anybody drinking or... yeah. maybe don't listen to this with your headphones in. Jordan's just going for chips and hummus here is where he's going. Mm-hmm. But I got popcorn over there and some Sprite. But we're going to talk a little bit about some of the sessions. And just for the sake of time, we're going to be covering one of the sessions for today that we went through. And later this month, we're going to be... just processing some more of the breakout sessions, but I think just for tonight, we're going to be talking about one of the sessions, one of the general sessions from a guy named Kurt Bruner. And Jordan, you'll remember that Kurt, right at the beginning, said he worked for Focus on the Family,
yes,
producing another wonderful audio program called Adventures in Odyssey, which is the only reason I know the zip code for Colorado Springs, Colorado. And the address for if you're riding in Canada. Mm-hmm. B6B4G3. Anyway, Kurt had the topic tonight about why family ministry is getting harder. And you're going to notice that we're just flying by the seat of our pants. No real outline here. We're just kind of talk a little bit about what he talked about and kind of go through our takeaways from it. But... Jordan, in one sentence here, answer the question, why is family ministry getting harder?
Well, for a number of reasons. We'll get into that for the episode, so I'm going to bait and switch. But maybe it's an encouragement to you that if you've been serving for a long time, to hear somebody acknowledging that it is indeed getting harder. And I hope that's not discouraging, but we just recognize some of the reasons why. And I think they're not earth-shattering, but they do make sense. And it's helpful for us to be aware of them as we process our approach to ministry and just like how we... I suppose that would be the approach to ministry, but just the reality of ministry. So we'll start with the overview. He gave four main reasons for why family ministry is getting more difficult these days. One is distractions. Two is demographics. Three is defection. And four is antagonism. So we'll probably just walk through those, and that will probably be the episode for today. So we'll start with, Dan, you wanna start with the first one there?
Yeah, things that distract us, all sorts of things. And we're not talking about like the movie Up with Doug being distracted with squirrels and whatnot, but there's all sorts of things that would distract us. I think most notably is our devices, and I'm talking about this, realizing the small irony in the fact that we're recording this episode on a thing that would distract us as well. So, the opportunities that our devices, like cell phones and tablets, present us with, and then also the significant challenges and hurdles and just evidence of the fall into sin that it also presents to our world as well. I forget who said it, the line of first we form our tools and then our tools form us. It's something Walt Mueller quotes often, and I don't have the person who wrote it because, again, we're using my phone to record this, but you can look it up on your own. The quote still stands. There's a lot of things that would distract us from having the right kind of priorities, having the right kind of focus. And that was one of my biggest points on that, was just the different things that communicate the wrong kind of priorities. Like if you're a parent and you're on your phone a lot and your kids see that, well, your kids are going to see that as the priority, the thing that is the most valuable, and whether you intend it to be or not, you know, that's kids pick up on subtleties like that a lot better than we tend to realize. But what did you have for distractions?
I think it's also just interesting to note that he started by saying it's not that we're just experiencing distractions for the first time, but where, as a generation ago, the distractions were mostly just activities. Like, we've got things pulling us away. We could even say jobs, relationships, different things like that. Mm-hmm. But all that stuff is still there. And now we're just adding a whole new level with technology. And we've seen, all of us have seen, the power that technology has in pulling us away and isolating. Is we just are together, but not connecting and interacting. And so that distraction is going to be significant. And it's tough to talk to kids who are distracted. You know, it's hard to give a complete presentation of the gospel if they're checking out after 30 seconds, or if you're presenting but then a funny cat video shows up, or whatever the case may be. And that's just a part of what we deal with. And so we can ask, how do we handle some distractions? I know some youth groups have had, like, turn in your phone policy as they come.
Does your youth group do that?
We do not.
Okay.
I have not thought through deeply enough the merits of doing something like that. I'm intrigued by it. But I also, like, I run into the, how do we balance taking that away from them so that they're more focused, but also balance the need to learn how to navigate and utilize it responsibly.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we do, and I have the caveat of just saying I have the right to do a screen check for you guys, and that's basically them immediately turning their phone around, and if it's on anything besides the Bible app, then I take the phone away. But that's not usually been a problem. I think we would just do straight paper Bibles if we had the choice. Sure. But we need a few more Bibles up in our youth room. So if you're listening and are looking for a tax write-off donation, we would certainly not be opposed to that sort of thing. I think, too, sometimes when we've got kids that just don't know where certain books of the Bible are, we've had days where, oh, we're only going to be looking at a couple verses, so we'll put it up on a projector or something, put it up on a screen in our youth room and just say, all right, we're going to read it off the projector today. And a lot of things that would cause us to have the wrong kind of priorities. But a second point that he gets into here was the demographics. And this was pretty interesting. Things that both Jordan and I had heard about, but to hear someone else talk about them was a little interesting. But Jordan, do you want to give a quick recap? Or
yeah,
I can try to, but
well, I'll do it in, like, the general sense, and then I'll translate into a youth ministry sense. So the general sense is, and this was interesting, but he mentioned that we are experiencing, and we hear this a lot, it seems, in these this generation, like, unprecedented, right? But an unprecedented demographic shift, which has been population collapse. And we're on the front edge of it now. We're seeing the ramifications. And you mentioned that for the first time, I don't remember what year it was. Was it this year? In Japan?
Yeah, I think that was right.
Okay, so if we're remembering correctly, it was in this year in Japan, there were more adult diapers sold than children's diapers. And so you talk about, like, generally speaking, as we've seen the population expand, and, you know, for, it's been going on since, you know, Noah the flood and everything. And there's things like wars and stuff that challenge that. But now, without those things, even though we have all these medical advancements and stuff, we are having people that are just saying, you know what, don't want kids. We could also say that abortion is probably having a really large impact on that too.
Birth control, all sorts of things that would impact it.
So what we have then is basically an inversion of, and what he said is economies, rather, in order to survive well, you need to have a bigger pool at the bottom supporting a narrower pool at the top.
Yeah, like a pyramid.
Yep. But now we're having fewer and fewer people entering the workforce that are needing to care for more and more elderly people. And nothing against elderly people, but we're just going to have a really big, you know, you think about the product demand is going to go down, the amount of people who can produce stuff is going to go way down, so you're going to need a much, your workforce is going to be really, all the things. That's, and to put that in the church context then, it's where this connects is that he was saying that, you know, for someone to enter church, if they're not grown up in the church, is like the most common time is when they're starting to have kids, where they're like, oh man, we need to like get the morals or whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. But with so many people skipping out on the kid part too, even that drive to get them connected to the church is leaving the least likely person to walk in is going to be a single
adult male. Yep.
And so we see that really impacting in ministry is people aren't coming because they're having less personal incentive to come.
Well, and I think that demographic that was least likely to come into the church was true even without the demographic shift.
Right.
Like, that's just kind of always been the case, at least observationally. No real hard facts behind that, but
I think the demographic shift isn't significant because they're just saying that there's that much more of those in right. that population.
Right. So, yeah, it's a lot being dependent on not as many. And mm-hmm. He also talked a little bit about there a shift of even some people wanting to have, seeing the value of having more of a traditional lifestyle with, like, the gender roles and family values. And I think observationally you'll see the trend on social media of the trad wife, the traditional roles of genders and want to buy a big piece of land and get a couple of miniature cows and an alpaca and a dog and all these other things. But it's interesting to see what that will mean for, I think, even us as smaller churches where I think what we see maybe in that sense, and this is just observationally off the cuff here too, but just because a lot of our smaller communities don't have jobs for younger people, a lot of the jobs are in bigger cities.
Yeah.
Our demographics kind of reflect that already as smaller churches where you have a lot of older people mm-hmm. and not so many younger people. And when a project needs to be done at the church, well, who are you going to call? Well, you know, yeah, Earl, you're not going to call Ghostbusters, but you just throwing out some Earl is old and he can't go up ladders anymore. Right. But nobody else is really around for whatever reason that might be. But just moving on, you had something else, but...
Well, I was just going to say, I wonder if that could be a blessing for smaller congregations in some sense. If there is a population that is seeking to be more, maybe from a faith background, disconnected from, like, the hum and drum and wanting to be a little bit more traditional, maybe, like, farming communities would see a little boom.
Maybe. I mean, you've got... There's been a few.
Hope.
I can think of a few people in our, at least in our friend circles, mm-hmm. that have moved back and started farming is kind of a hard thing to get, just jump into.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, there's other work like contracting and mm-hmm. just basic small town jobs that people find yeah. value in.
Well, and I know that we don't have, this isn't from our congregation, but another church in the Upper Peninsula had a young couple move back. Because the wife is able to work remotely. So they decided that they'd move back to her hometown. The husband is working in a gym as like a personal trainer kind of a thing. But sure. But that's something that we might see too. So yeah. As we're thinking of ministry, you know, take it with a grain of salt. It's not a promise, but there might be open doors for us to explore too.
I think there's just always open doors. I think we just have to be content with the people God has put in our doorsteps, so to speak.
Like, yeah.
Maybe that is not a lot of younger people. Maybe for this season it's older people, but to remain faithful with who we have. The third point that he talked about was defection, as in people walking away from their faith. They are not non-churched, but they are de-churched. And I think that was a significant point that he had, was that most of the people that aren't Christians are people who had a background growing up in the church, and whether they deconstructed or just said it's not for me, or maybe they were hurt by the church and they just have kind of wandered away and left that, you're dealing with a presence more in our culture of people who have that faith background, who have left that faith, as opposed to those who just have never heard about Jesus. What did you think about defection?
Yeah, I could see that. Like, and I thought it was interesting that he said the reason that he thought that was, like, in some of the research, when people were talking about why they weren't part of a congregation, they gave really specific examples. And he's like, I think that's kind of strange to have specific examples if you've never really been a part of it. And that's when he, like, dug deeper and found, oh, it's people who had been, but then have walked away. And I think we see some of that. I think we see, you know, a lot of people who've been hurt by the church in some different way. Sometimes it's just because it wasn't how they wanted to experience something, or they were told something biblically that they didn't want to believe. I think that's a common issue with our culture right now, because we do want to kind of be gods of our own lives in that sense. But I think that, you know, we want to acknowledge there's genuine pain that comes too. And I think a part of it too is just the point why that showed up in D6 is a lot of this comes back to faith not seeming to be genuinely lived out at home, which is something for us to consider as we're hoping to walk alongside and equip parents and support parents. How do we encourage a home environment where the gospel matters, you know, where it actually changes the way that we live?
Was he the one that used the flower illustration today? I was trying to remember. Yeah, so he had just the general mentality that we often see, I think, is the you pour water on top of flowers and you wonder why isn't some of that water getting down to the roots? Why isn't the plant absorbing it? Well, it's because a lot of our faith, the assumption is a lot of the faith development is taking place at the church. Like, the parents have passed that responsibility off to the church. And somewhat unfortunately, the church has said, yes, we'll take this, instead of saying, no, let's do this together. And the real growth happens when, not that you get a bigger watering can, but that you water the right spots here. And we want to make sure that we're doing due diligence and doing ministry properly here by coming alongside parents to make sure that that faith formation is happening outside of Sundays and Wednesdays. Or I guess Mondays here in your case too, but let's or whenever you have your group time, you know, you're doing what you can to allow faith to happen at all points in life. But
yeah, and the last point is antagonism. So they're talking about how it's growing, and I thought it was helpful to see he brought two different ways that they talk through antagonism. And a little bit of background on the speaker: he's currently working with Open Doors, which is a ministry for the persecuted church around the world, and they'll do like the rankings of where it's hardest to be a follower of Jesus. And so he was talking with the founder of that organization, a man by the name of Brother Andrew, and they were talking about the two different ways that persecution happens. One is like smashing persecution, which is what he said most often what we hear, like when there's violence, when it's like in your face, attacking,
burning churches, businesses,
all that stuff. But then he said the other one was squeezing persecution, where there's pressure to conform, pressure to not necessarily live out the gospel. So you could think about things like in some cultures where it's illegal to convert to Christianity or to evangelize, right? So a parent then at home would have to worry about getting in trouble legally for telling their kids about Jesus. You can see that a lot in even our culture today in America, with just how having a biblical worldview on things like identity and sexuality, you get name called, right? Nobody wants to be called a homophobe or anything like that, transphobe. But yet we have to be ready to face that in order to be consistent with what Scripture says. And it might come to a point too where for some, it's going to be a job, you know. And that's a hard reality, but we need to be ready to face what is coming. And likely, you know, knowing the devil and the adversary, knowing what scripture says about the end time, it's probably going to get worse.
Probably, yeah.
Probably. In our lifetime. I mean, we can't say there could be a revival. It could be prolonged, but most likely we're going to see that increase.
Yeah. And here's where I'm noticing, like, I do not write fast enough, so I didn't have too much under the antagonism, except the sense of when parents have the feeling the need to try and fit in, especially when community with other parents is sparse and hard to come by. The pressure to fit in usually drives parents away from making hard decisions about proper mm-hmm. priorities, where instead of making the hard decision to say, you know what, no, actually, this is important, we're going to prioritize this, we're going to prioritize our faith community instead of these other things. Trying to fit in pressures parents to really struggle, I think, to be able to say no, to feel mm-hmm. comfortable having that freedom to be able to decline and say, actually, it's not important that my kids are at this Sunday practice. And I am picking on sports, but it's, you know, that it's hard for parents to say no because everyone else is saying yes. And if we're not going to go play, then why do we sign up for this in the first place?
Right.
So that's a lot of the antagonism behind it. But he did point out, do you want to talk real quick just on the 4 points about the important decisions? Did you write those down?
I did.
I did as well.
Before, though, yeah, one more thing with antagonism that he mentioned that I thought was worth talking about. He mentioned there's two likely scenarios for families as we're experiencing a culture of higher antagonism towards Christianity. One is where they're feeling that antagonism more. So, my kids, we're weird, and I've been told by friends that I love that we live under a rock because we don't have a TV in our house. And that doesn't mean we don't have screens. We have laptops where we'll have the kids watch some YouTube videos for school, but mm-hmm. My kids have not watched hardly any movies. They haven't watched TV, so to speak. So people are talking about Toy Story and my kids are like, what? We've read a little bit of a book about that, right? And so there's times where they might feel the pressure of and they've been asked more than once, what do you guys do? How are you alive right now? Which is kind of interesting because my kids are just like, well, we read books, we played card games, we play outside, you know, they're fine. But culturally that pressure is being expanded. Right. So that's one opportunity. The other opportunity, which is the more scary one and more concerning, he said, is that we become more assimilated to our culture. Mm. We blend in more. We fall more in line. And as we think about the families in our ministry, that's something to be aware of too, because there's a danger there. And basically, we're walking at that point almost into some sense of syncretism, where right. we're kind of blending, trying to blend our faith with what our culture is telling us.
And that's, I think, the scary part, is that you can say all the right words, you can seem like you're on the right path, and mm-hmm. you know, it's the broad is the path, you know, that leads to destruction, and many find it, but the people that are true disciples, right, it's the Bible makes it pretty clear that there's people who play and say the right words, they play Christian, but there's a day coming when Jesus says, I did not know you. And honestly, that's maybe the scariest verse in the Bible for yeah. me, just to think oh my word, is that going to be me? And you look again to with that, that is kind of the question you ask. I'd encourage you to look at the assurance of salvation. If you're worried if that's you, repent, mm-hmm. believe the gospel, and go knowing that your sins are forgiven. And, you know, get to know the person you're following even more. That's what it means to be a Christian. And as leaders, you know, we want to make sure that we're communicating the right thing as well. But yeah. Being assimilated into the culture is really easy to just mm-hmm. fall into and just...
it takes no effort.
Well, that's just it. It's that, and it's just easy to go along with the flow. It is much harder to actually... find a statement that he made, right, to be able to defend the things that are sacred. And how do you know what's sacred? Well, look at what's being attacked the most in culture right now. Think yeah. about what's being under in the crosshairs of all the attacks. And you see a lot of the family values, not just family values, but families in general. You look about gender identity, you look at sexuality, you look at everything that God made good and perfect and holy, and those are things are under attack. And we come to the defense of those things because it's part of what it means to be made in the image of God. But
right.
Just for the sake of time here, because both of us are tired, it's a long day, and it's going to be a long day tomorrow. He talked about four decisions that parents make, and I can go through this real quick too, but he talked about the need for us to be able to direct the spiritual formation of our students. And I'm saying us just because Jordan and I are both parents, but as leaders, two leaders here, the second point that he made, the decision for us here is to be able to steer their education, having our hands on at all points, whether you're homeschooling, public schooling, to be able to stand up and fight and defend and control what your students, what your kids are learning about, going to parent-teacher conferences and going to school board meetings and saying, no, it's important that our kids learn about this and coming to the defense on that.
And I think that's an important thing to highlight too, because I think sometimes people might interpret that that means homeschooling, but really it doesn't, because you can have homeschooling parents that are honestly disconnected and not directing and thinking through what their kids are being exposed to. And similarly with public school, it's easy to have the hands-off approach, but the big point was that we're not bystanders in that process. We can't afford to be bystanders. We need to know what our kids are being taught, and we can have conversations in both contexts. Mm-hmm. What does Scripture say about these things? Are they true?
Yeah. The third point here, and I like this part too, was guiding media habits. I think especially for our girls, as they're getting older, part of what they're learning now is a bit of typing for school. Mm. So they're on the computer a lot more. We're part of the Adventures in Odyssey Club, so they're also on the computer there to be able to scroll through the whole catalog of almost 1,000 episodes now to listen to whatever. So they're on the screens more, and you're like, okay, well, we got to protect and defend. You're not going to watch. You don't need to watch to listen, right? Mm-hmm. So you can hit play and then go do something else while you listen to this. But the line that I kind of laughed at a little bit was, you got to give their developing brains a chance to actually become a mature adult. And just sitting in that vegetative state that screens often turn us into is not healthy. But the fourth and final important decision that he made today was the need for nurturing sexual wholeness. And we've talked about this before, but again, we see here the importance of it's sacred. It is what God designed us to be. And we ought to defend that in our and proclaim what is true and biblical in the lives of our kids, not just our own biological kids, but our students as well. And I think part of what makes this difficult is that as leaders, we tend to understand this. I mean, this is the world we live in. We see it. It's trying to communicate these things well to the rest of our church that becomes the difficult ongoing task. Mm-hmm. It's showing that kind of importance and priorities to families that may be a little bit of apathetic. And we've talked about them. Actually, when we did our last D6 sessions, I think we talked about apathetic parents in that as well.
And I think this point especially is such a sensitive subject to talk to parents about, talking to their kids about sexuality and wholeness. And it's so important. But I know this is one of the top two that you talk to a parent and they start blubbering and
sweating,
I don't know how to talk about that. So we can really take a lead in helping them talk about it by just giving them some tools.
Mm. Yeah. Well, you want to get on to your hummus here?
Yeah, it's almost midnight.
Man.
Before it turned into pumpkin.
Oh.
All right, so with that, may you go in peace and serve the Lord.
Thanks for listening to Flyover Ministry. You can find, follow, and give feedback on our Instagram and Facebook pages at Flyover Ministry.
You can also get in contact with us on our Gmail account, flyoverministrypodcast@gmail.com. You can find other episodes that we've recorded on iTunes and Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, and please feel free to share them with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.